Do you guys like sports? Because, hey, we like sports. Talk to Goods with the Sporting Goods with Ian and Mike every Monday from 2 to 3 here on Brooklyn College Radio 1090 AM and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org, because we do sports right.
Live from the campus of Brooklyn College, it is Geek Speak with Ian Levenstein. Ladies and gentlemen, Ian Levenstein.
Hey there, everybody. What's going on? My name is Ian Levenstein, and welcome to Geek Speak Episode 2. I don't believe I'm on the internet right now because our internet is currently down here at Brooklyn College Radio, but this will be up on the internet as soon as I am done transferring it to an MP3 file. Yes, this is indeed episode 2 of the Geek Speak podcast, usually simulcasted on Brooklyn College Radio 1090 AM and streaming on the web, brooklyncollegeradio.org. But as I said, today we are streamless, but that's perfectly fine with me. Once again, welcome to all of my brand new listeners that found me through my podcast at geekspeak.typepad.com. Got about 23 subscribers right now, and I hope to bring that up along the week as I will hopefully be getting myself a iTunes feed sometime either this week or next week. Probably next week, considering that once I get home from here, I'm probably going to end up collapsing on my bed because it has been a long day. But nevertheless, I hope to be up on there pretty soon. So once again, welcome to Geek Speak. Today I'm going to be pretty much going retro with what I'm discussing here. A whole lot of old stuff has been coming up lately that you probably haven't heard about in a while. And I figured, why not discuss it here on the show? I'm going to be talking about some new stuff as well. I'll be mentioning some comic news. Well, not exactly news, just more of an occurrence that has been happening more and more while I'm on the subway here in New York City. And I will also be going into some anime developments, anime soundtrack developments, as I found out something pretty interesting about my soundtracks that I have gotten from a website called Anime Castle, and I'll be getting that into that a little later. But let's start things off here with the computer side of things and get myself started on a little bit of information that I found out through Dig.com. Yes, Dig.com is indeed pretty much the place to find out information about anything these days, because they are up to the day. They have people posting day by day all of the goings-on that are happening around the internet world, tech world, music world, movie world. I can go on and on here. And they posted an interesting video that was recently posted on Google Video, which is my new best friend, by the way, because I'm watching so many old things that I haven't seen in so long. A lot of old tech TV videos are there. I'm catching up on the old days. A lot of the tech TV stuff I missed because I came into tech TV too late. Yeah, I came into Tech TV in its last year of existence, and by the time I was really getting into the screensavers, it had already become G4 Tech TV, and it was becoming the bastardized version of the screensavers, which eventually became Attack of the Show. So, I found a Google video of Leo Laporte and his former partner, Kate, talking about the ultimate gaming machine. Yeah, the ultimate gaming machine. This is back from 1998, okay? And back in 1998, the ultimate gaming machine was ultimate for its time, sure. And it's a perfect testament to the times changing. Because you look at that now, and this would be a bottom-of-the-line computer in 2005. It's only been a couple of years, too. 98 to 2005, it hasn't even been 10 years. And their ultimate gaming machine had, now brace yourself here, here we go, a Pentium 2 processor. They're up to Pentium 4 now, obviously, and the Pentium Celeron as well. 128 megabytes of RAM. Now, this day and age, 128 will get you by, but it's bottom of the line. And back then, it was state of the art. Leo Laporte's exact words, you'll never need more than 64. You believe that? You'll never need more than 64 megabytes of RAM. Well, you've been proven wrong, buddy. I mean, I love you, but you were sort of wrong about that. I mean, you were right about the time, but not now. 128 megabytes of RAM on that thing. Its biggest accomplishment was that it had 3D sound and wave capabilities on the computer. So when you were playing your games, it sounded incredible. For the time, of course. Now, I mean, this day and age, in the world of surround sound and the world of USB speakers and USB microphones and USB headphones and MP3 players and blah, 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 that's not really too much of an accomplishment anymore. But back then, that was something huge. And the hard drive was, I believe it was a 6 gigabyte hard drive, which once again, back in the day, was pretty huge. I mean, back then, you could get by on a 2 gig. I mean, please, I remember, I mean, talk about old school. Up until about 4 or 5 years back, I was using a 1993 Performa 575. Oh yeah, that was my baby for a while there. My Macintosh computer, my Performa 575. I believe the OS was OS 7 back then. Might have even been 6. And it had, let's see, I think after updating it, I had 20 megabytes of RAM. And I don't even know how small my hard drive was. It might have even only been like 200 megabytes. And I couldn't go past, back then I was still an AOL user because I didn't know any better. I couldn't go past AOL 6.0 on that because it was just that outdated. AIM didn't work right. I couldn't play MP3s. No one knew what an MP2 was. Oh, man. And when I got my Dell, I was a happy, happy camper. Of course, now I no better than to buy a Dell, but back then I really didn't. I mean, I recently upgraded my Dell, but that's another story for another time. Now, the computer that they were playing this on had a 6 gigabyte hard drive and 128 megabytes of RAM because they wanted to turn it into a Quake 2 server. Quake 2. Quake 2. That is an old game these days. You look at Quake 2 now, it's on par with maybe Doom graphics-wise. And not really much to talk about there, play-wise. I mean, sure, it's a great game to play, and I'm sure old-school gamers probably, you know, start it up every now and then, have some fun with it. But back then, this was state-of-the-art. And now it's 2005, and you've got so much more capabilities to work with here. I mean, if you had a 6 gigabyte hard drive today, you would fill that in a week. A month, if you're careful. 6 gigabyte hard drive. I mean, it amazes me, it really does, how that was state-of-the-art back then. And they were absolutely ecstatic about having it, and I'm sure back then it was a really, really good thing to have. But this day and age, you wouldn't get too far with that, especially with the Pentium 2 processor. Up to Pentium 4 now, and it's much easier to use, much better to use. So hey, back then, I would have been clamoring for that machine with my Performa 575. At least I didn't have one of those. That's all I have to say. Now, switching over to outdated OSs. Over here at Brooklyn College, at the Brooklyn College Radio Studio, we have machines that are running on Windows 2000. Now, it's Windows 2000 Professional, so it's the sleek, streamlined Windows 2000, which has all the capabilities to work in a radio studio of our sorts. And for the longest time before I came in here, this was a bare-bones system. It really was. Everybody was using Internet Explorer. That's strike one. The virus system, all they have here is, I believe they have Sophos. Yes, they have Sophos antivirus for the Windows NT 2000 XP, which is well enough, but I still have not figured out how to actually clean the system using Sophos. I'm sure that, you know, if I had a instruction manual, I'd be able to do so. But I'm so used to Antivir right now. That's Antivir, the freeware virus scan and defender that you can download from antivir.com, that switching to Sophos was like a kick in the arm for me. So they have Sophos, and they had no firewall. No firewall at all. So, of course, when I first came in here this past semester and saw their setup, I was going out of my mind. I mean, this thing was outdated. I mean, Windows 2000 is not too bad in the scheme of things. In fact, it might have actually been a little more secure than the original Windows XP. And I mean, they're still coming out with patches for it so they can actually update the system and make sure it doesn't get any of the new worms going around. But still, it's Windows 2000. It's Internet Explorer. It's Sophos. What am I going to do here? So the other day, I'm surfing one of the computers over in the production A, which is the studio right to my right here as I sit in the master control room. And I kept getting error messages from Sophos telling me that something was trying to access my computer and that it would not allow it. And I get the messages over and over and over again. I got it about 11 to 13 times in a row. And by then, I'm pulling my hair out. I'm like, that's it. Now, I posted little post-its all around the station telling people, if you're going to use the internet, use Mozilla Firefox because Internet Explorer is full of security holes. And I made sure to let everybody know that. Sure, it's a geeky thing to say, but it's the truth, period. So here I am, surfing on Firefox, and I keep getting these messages. So I think to myself, all right, what am I going to do? I don't know how to use Sophos, and I don't want to completely disable the virus scanner and download a new one because that might complicate the system. So I went with a interesting route. I went on Google, my trusty buddy Google, as it should be to pretty much any techie out there by now. I mean, come on, who still uses Yahoo? I mean, I'm sure maybe everybody uses Ask Jeeves every now and then, but Yahoo is a second fiddle to Google this day and age. So I went on Google, and I tried to search for an online virus scanning tool. Now, you got to watch out when you're doing one of those, because a lot of them are not legit. A lot of them say that they're a virus scanner, when in reality, they're just trying to sucker you into buying their product. So I made sure to be safe. And recently on the KFI, the Tech Guy show, Wheel Reports weekly radio show in San Francisco, he brought up an interesting product. Somebody was discussing a virus scan, and they had gone online and used an online virus scan. So I found it. Now, the product, I'm sure some of you are familiar with this by now, the product is Trend Micro. That's the product. And they recently added a spyware scanner to their online capabilities. So I checked it out, and it looked interesting enough, so I gave it a run. So I scanned for both viruses and spyware to try and get rid of everything on the system. Once I was done, and this is scanning two hard drives. This is scanning a C and a D drive. I'm not quite sure how big the D drive is, or the C drive for that matter, because this isn't my home computer, so I don't know everything about this computer here. But it found 63. Yeah, 63. Three different worms on this computer. Without a firewall, those are the problems that you're going to be coming up with here. 63 infections. Now, mind you, that's not nearly as bad as my computer was when I didn't know any better, and for a long time I didn't have a firewall up, and I didn't have any spyware programs. The first time I searched for spyware on my system with SpyBot, I came up with about 200 entries. When I searched with Adaware, I found even more. And then when I searched with Microsoft's product, which is very, very good, which is something you don't usually say about Microsoft, but yes, it was actually very, very good, that found a couple more as well. And they found 63 on here. Now, they weren't all viruses. I believe there were maybe 12 viruses on the computer, none of which were Trojans, but they were viruses nonetheless. They were completely gumming up the works here. I mean, I had Cool Web Search on there. I had a couple of other popular spywares on there that I've heard of in the past, and one that's actually been spreading through AIM lately, which I'm lucky that I found that about. There's a fake JPEG going around AIM that if you download it, you got a virus, which you're certainly going to have to look out for. I believe it's wow, I'm trying to remember. I think it's something like SOC23.jpg or something along those lines. It's actually .exe. They're lying about it being a JPEG. And I'm lucky I realized that before I stupidly downloaded it or something along those lines. Otherwise, I would have had a worm on my system, and that wouldn't have made me too happy. But nevertheless, I cleaned it up, made it good as new, and right away went on the internet and downloaded Zone Alarm for the computers here at Brooklyn College. Now, every computer has it right now, except for the one that I'm currently using in Master Control, because that one I did not have access to at the time. And since the internet's currently down here, well, it's going to have to wait until next week for me to actually put it on the computer. But these computers are safe for possibly the first time since they were actually installed here at the radio station. So all I have to say is that I am happy with the job I have done. Now, people here at the radio station, right away, first thing they tell me is, Ian, I can't do this, or Ian, I can't do that, when I put on new things on the computer. because they've never worked with a firewall before. So they're like, should I allow or should I decline? And I just tell them, if it's anything that you know is safe, then just click allow. If it's a green item, chances are you're good. If it's a yellow item, chances are you're good. If it's a red item, well, zone alarm's automatically stopping it anyway, so you're fine. So I'm hoping that what I did here at the radio station has made it at least a little safer. Switching over to the video game side of things, I got one old and one new for you right now. So my buddy Chris, that's Chris with a K, recently bought herself We Heart Katamari. Oh yeah, the most psychedelic game out there on the market has just been purchased by a friend of mine. So we went to see The Corpse Bride, and I'll have a review for that probably on next week's show, as I'm probably not going to have time to do so here, but if I do, I'll squeeze it in. And when we came back from that, we headed over to my place and we played some We Heart Katamari. Now, after playing it, I had never owned Katamari Damacy, the original game. After playing it, I just thought to myself, I need Katamari Damacy. Because Katamari Damacy is literally the exact same game, only with minus a couple of the additions that they brought into We Heart Katamari. I mean, they added a see-through object viewer thing for the We Heart Katamari so that you're not stuck behind items without knowing where you are anymore, which is a nice thing. It's almost like a little viewer hole right in the middle of an object that you can see when you're behind something. And also it added a co-op mode with the Katamari, which is very difficult. I mean, you got to actually talk to the person that you're playing with or else you're going to end up screwed, basically. So I picked up Katamari Damacy. That's the one I'll review first because that's the first game. Picked it up for $17 over at GameStop. Used because I wanted to buy a soda and I only had a $20 bill. Ah, come on, why? That's a good reason. So I picked it up used and started playing it. I have to say, this game is addictive. Seriously. I mean, who would have ever thought that rolling around a ball, picking up random stuff would be so fun? All right, fine. I'm sure a lot of people have thought that in the past, but nobody ever made it into a video game until now. And Namco has a gold mine on their hands right now. Katamari Damacy. For those of you who don't know what it is, it's a story, if you can call it that, about the king of the universe who got rid of all the stars in the sky. And he's asking the prince to gather up all these random objects on Earth and get them a certain size in order to replenish the sky with stars. Now, what picking up objects on Earth has to do with getting stars in the sky, I may never know, but then again, I've never taken LSD, so I wouldn't really know how it works. I mean, seriously, I mean, if the guys who created this game were not on drugs at the time, I'd be very, very surprised. Seriously, I mean, you cannot make a game like this and be completely sane. But again, I'm not going to get too far into that. The gameplay elements are very fun. You're mostly going to end up using the two analog sticks on the PlayStation 2 controller when you're using this game. The occasional R2 or L1 to change the camera angles, but really not too much of that going on. You're mostly just sticking with your two analogs, and the two analogs allow you to go left, right. You can do a super jump if you want. You can do a super speed up. If you move the analog sticks enough times in the proper direction, you'll actually go in that direction. If you click down the analogs, you change your camera angle very quickly, which is a quick stop, I believe it is, or a quick start. And that actually works really well in the scheme of the game. That's the one I use the most, actually. The other ones are sort of there for show and really don't add too much to the gameplay. Now, the most fun part of this game is being able to get your Katamari larger and larger until you're picking up objects that you've always wanted to roll up in your life. You know, like rats and ants and annoying people. Oh, come on. Tell me that you never wanted to roll up an annoying person in your life. But, oh, wow. Maybe it's just me. But it's really, really fun playing this game. I mean, you start off small with, like, tacks and stuff like that until eventually you're actually going with live animals. and there's crabs that you can pick up. I don't know what crabs are doing in a living room. And yes, these are real crabs, not the other type, you sickos. And it's a really, really enjoyable experience. I would certainly give this game at least a 4 out of 5, maybe even a 5 out of the 5 as I start playing it. The one problem I had with the game, while I was over at my best friend's house, we started playing the game and there were some problems with the music, but I'm thinking that was probably just his PlayStation 2, because the disc is perfectly flawless. There's a little bit of dust on it, but that's it. And when I took it home and tried it in mine, it worked perfectly fine. And he's had problems with the PlayStation 2 in the past, so I'm sure that's probably just him going on here, because we had this really annoying buzzing noise going on, and after a while, the music locked up, and it just was not enjoyable. Over at my house, however, it's perfectly enjoyable, so I'm going to hope that it is just his PlayStation 2 acting up. Now, We Heart Katamari, the whole point of We Heart Katamari is that Katamari Damacy was popular. I mean, my God. Can you believe that? The entire idea was that Katamari Damacy was popular. That's it. That's the plot. Right there. I just summed it up for you. The king loves his popularity so much that he is going down to Earth, well, the princes, to show the world what it's like to have a Katamari. That's what he does. That's the point of the game. Can you believe that? Absolutely amazing how Namco can be that ingenious to make absolutely no additions to a game other than adding a couple princes and co-op play and putting it out there and having people eat it up with a spoon. Now, the Japanese copy of the game has a box art of everybody outside the Namco headquarters with signs saying how much they love Katamari. Add me to the list, folks. We Heart Katamari. They're not just saying that anymore. This is real stuff here. It's incredibly fun, and I really think that you guys should go out right now. If you have not already bought Katamari Damacy, start at the first one, because the first one is as fun as the second one. Sure, there's the co-op elements and all that, but it's only $20. Only $20 for a greatest hits Katamari Damacy. And obviously, you'll be able to get a used copy for a couple less bucks, which is exactly what I did. And Katamari, to your heart's delight. Switching over to the anime side of things. Now, as I mentioned a little bit in the earlier parts of the show, I order a lot of anime soundtracks from AnimeCastle.com. Now, AnimeCastle.com, for those of you who do not know what it is a pretty popular website that a lot of people that enjoy anime use in order to purchase their soundtracks for the shows that they like. Now, they have a lot of soundtracks on there. And they have the American versions, which are usually around $11.99, $12.99. And then they have the Japanese versions, which, surprisingly enough, were cheaper than the American versions. Pretty much every soundtrack they have there, pretty much every Japanese version of it, is $9.99. So call me a sucker. I thought I was getting a deal. I thought that out of the goodness of their heart, why I would think this, I don't know, they were selling Japanese authentics for $9.99. Now, mind you, that probably is the stupidest thing I've ever thought in my life, because Japanese authentics can go for about $30 a CD, usually. Yeah, $30 a CD. That's the asking price for one CD these days. But still, I saw them for the prices they were, and I jumped at the opportunity. The other day, I was inspecting my copy, and I realized that things were not exactly what they were supposed to be. There was, for one thing, a little smile next to my Gungrave video game soundtrack that I recently picked up from Anime Castle. And that smile is probably the worst thing you can find on a soundtrack. Why? Because that means it's a bootleg, folks. Yeah. That's not the company that made it. That's from Taiwan. Anime Castle sells Taiwanese and Korean bootlegs. Nowhere on the website does it say anything about these not being authentic. Nowhere on the website does it say anything about selling bootlegs. Nowhere on the website does it say anything about being from Korea or Taiwan. But they are. You can usually tell that something is fake by the SM Records LTD on the disc, or from a KO Records LTD, because that's usually a good sign that it's Korean, folks, if it's KO, or a little smile symbol on it, because that little smile symbol is the Taiwanese. Now, mind you, these are completely flawless, pretty much. Almost every single soundtrack that you get that are bootlegs from Taiwan or Korea or something along those lines are usually really, really good copies of that CD. But I thought I was getting authentics. Mind you, it was very stupid of me to think that with the price, but I'm probably not the only one. I know I'm not the only one because I've told people about this and they were shocked that a legitimate business like Anime Castle would be selling bootleg soundtracks the way they are. And they can get in a lot of trouble for this also. They're a legitimate business coming out of New York, and they are selling bootleg copies of soundtracks. Now, I'm not asking for anybody to avoid buying stuff from Anime Castle, because they're a good company. They are. They sell most of their DVDs for low prices, and these are the legitimate copies of a CD or a DVD, the American ones at least. The Japanese ones, on the other hand, don't expect too much, folks. That's all I'm saying. Because you're not getting authenticity. You're getting a cheap bootleg, which is often not as bad a thing as you would think. But to me, that was almost crushing as an anime fan. I thought I was supporting Japan here. I thought I was supporting the creators. I thought I was supporting the original authors of this music. But instead, I was supporting bootlegging. Now, see, with a lot of things, like I mentioned in the first episode of this show, a lot of things I'll allow bootlegging. You know, like I'll say to myself, okay, fine, I'm going to buy this later. I'll go with the burned copy, or I'll go with the copy that I downloaded off the internet. That's fine. But when I think I'm buying a legitimate copy of something that turns out to be a bootleg, I get pissed, and I am pissed beyond relief about this. I'm sure I'll get over it over time, but I'm going to think twice about buying my soundtracks from Anime Castle from now on. I'm not going to boycott them. I'll probably just end up buying the American copies from now on. I'll spend the extra $3 because I'm not buying bootlegs anymore. It's just not going to happen. I avoided buying a Cowboy Bebop soundtrack for $34 off of eBay because I saw in the guy's profile a couple bad reviews, red reviews, which are zero reviews, saying that the purchase turned out to be a bootleg. I didn't buy it for that exact reason. And I'm not going to buy anything like this from Anime Castle again. Now, on the anime side of things, on a much happier note, to say the least, once again going retro, I recently got a hold of the first 6 volumes of GTO. That's Great Teacher Onizuka. Now, for those of you unfamiliar with Great Teacher Onizuka, it is an anime that was made in Japan about 5 years ago. And the anime was about a teacher who used to be a gangbanger, pretty much. He used to be the head of a gang. And he decides one day that he is going to become the best teacher in Japan. Now, how he decided to do this, I'm not entirely sure. Maybe he just decided to like give back to the community or something like that. But he decides he wants to become the greatest teacher in Japan. So he goes about it and becomes a teacher. And, of course, guess what? Hilarity ensues. Are you surprised by that? I'm not really too surprised by that at all. Now, the characters in this, pretty much everybody loves Onizuka. Pretty much everybody loves Onizuka. I say that because there are plenty of people who do not like Onizuka. Like, for instance, the vice principal of the series. But most people like him. And he's trying to get this girl teacher to fall in love with him. And his students start out disliking him and end up eventually coming around. He's got a delinquent bunch of students that after a while start to respect him. Blah, 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 blah. It's a hilarious, hilarious anime. There's an ongoing joke about the vice principal's car. Where every single time, he absolutely loves this car. And every single time he gets his car fixed up, Onizuka ends up destroying it again. And every time, like, you would think the joke would get stale after a while, but every single time I see this happen, the Crespa, I believe it is, I just start laughing. This is hilarious stuff. And the most important thing about this is that it has a good English dub. Now, mind you, there probably are going to be people out there who do not like it because it's not, you know, the authentic Japanese, but there are not many things that David Lucas does that I do not enjoy. David Lucas is probably my favorite voice actor, one of my favorites. Him and Crispin Freeman are probably my two favorites. He is outstanding. Now, his track record, for those of you who do not know the name, you probably will as soon as I start mentioning what animes he's been in. He played Spike in Cowboy Bebop. He played Mugen in Samurai Champloo. He played Ballad Bird Lee in Gungrave. He was in Wolf's Rain as well. They don't list what the name of his character was. He was one of the main baddies in Wolf's Rain. For the life of me, I can't remember what the name of the character actually was. But he was in Wolf's Rain. He's also been in Oh My Goddess. He's been in Yu Yu Hakusho, the movie. He played a random thug. He was in X. He was in Trigun. The list goes on and on. This is one of the most storied. Oh, and he also played Roger Smith in Big O, which a lot of you guys probably know him from if you've watched the Big O on Adult Swim on Cartoon Network. David Lucas is a great voice actor. He puts a lot of energy into everybody he plays and completely steals the show, which is why he's perfect as a leading man. And he's absolutely perfect as Akichi Onizuka. So I will listen to the dub just for him alone. Now, there are some moments in the dub that do fall a little flat, so I'm not going to give it a straight 5 out of 5. I'm probably not even going to give it a 4 out of 5. I'll give it a 3.5 out of 5, and for a dub, that's probably one of the best ratings I can give, because I'm not too big a fan of dubs. There are a couple that I like Gungrave and Samurai Champloo and Cowboy Bebop, but past that, there aren't really too many that are good. I mean, God, if you sit me down and make me listen to the dub for something like Gravitation, I'll probably throw up. So yeah, I will give the dub of Great Teacher Onizuka a 3.5 out of 5, and I will give the anime itself a 4 out of 5. Switching over to the comic book side of things. Yeah, hey, I am a comic geek. I am a registered comic geek. The show might be called Geek Speak, but I can certainly say I'm a comic geek. I have more comics in my house than I know what to do with. And that much is certainly not going to change anytime soon. Now, the other day, I was going over to the Yankee game with my father. and I happened to be reading a Wolverine comic as done by Mark Millar. Mark Millar, one of my favorite writers in comics today. And the particular issue happened to be about the Holocaust. Now, the story behind this issue is that Mark Millar was writing it, and he had wanted to write it for some time, but he couldn't get it right. And eventually he turned for help to the recently deceased and one of the greatest comic book creators of all time, Will Eisner. He turned to him for help. He met him for the first time, and Will Eisner gave him the help that he needed. He told him that a story like this should not have Wolverine spouting his typical one-liners that he usually spouts, and it shouldn't have him running around screaming bub at everybody or anything along those lines. This had to be taken seriously. So that is exactly what he set out to do. He tried to make it as serious as possible. And Wolverine actually only says about 4 words in the entire issue. Now, there is a running narrative going on that you see through the thought bubbles, or thought bars, as it were, because those are the one part of the comic that aren't really bubbles. And he completely drives a couple of the people involved with this concentration camp crazy. They keep killing him, and he keeps coming back. Which, of course, is a wonderful use for Wolverine's powers. So I'm on the train, and I'm reading this comic, and there is a religious Jewish girl sitting next to me who's pretty much on the train up until I'm around 34th Street in Manhattan. And I got on the train at King's Highway, so that's about a 45-minute trip. And she was pretty much reading the comic more than she was reading her own book. She was looking over to my shoulder, reading it. And eventually she asked me what comic it was, and I showed her. She said thank you, and eventually she got off. And my dad turns to me and says, wow, she was reading that more than she was reading her own book. And I think to myself, this has been happening more and more lately, where I've been on some sort of transit, whether it be a bus, whether it be on a train, and there's at least one person looking over my shoulder as I read a comic. And it's come to my attention that comic books are more popular than they've been since probably the Superman years, the early years. Comic books have diversified themselves to the point where pretty much anybody can find at least one comic book that they are going to relate with or they are going to enjoy just because of its subject matter. Now, I believe that this girl enjoyed it because of the subject matter that was involved. Obviously, the Holocaust means a lot to Jewish people for what happened there. And she seemed to, I mean, from the looks of things, she seemed very involved with it and thought that it was a good representation of the horrors that occurred in the Holocaust. But I'm thinking to myself, this is a good sign, folks. This is a very, very good sign for comic books. Things are looking up. I hope they stay that way for a long time. I hope that the writing stays as amazing, as superb as it has been lately. I hope it stays at that level. I hope that the art remains as detailed and significant as it has been in the past. Because if it doesn't, and it starts becoming coolness factor over everything again, well, then comic books might not have too much of a future left. Which is, of course, why I hope that's not what occurs. Because we need comics. I need comics. As the nerd that I am, I hope they have a long life to come. Now, switching over to comic books themselves, I recently picked up JLA 119. Now, not to give away any spoilers here, because just like the guys over at Comic Geek Speak, I don't want to make it so that you guys will not be able to enjoy your comic books. I want to make sure that everybody is able to listen to this show
and not have to turn anything off. So I'm going to leave it at this. A major development for the upcoming Infinite Crisis occurs in this issue. And my jaw completely dropped when this event occurred. It's a very, very significant event. And it leads directly into Infinite Crisis. In fact, what happened in this issue will probably be what Infinite Crisis starts off with. For those of you who have seen the art by Phil Jimenez, very nice man, by the way. In fact, I hope to have an interview that I did with Phil Jimenez a while back on the show sometime in the near future. If I get the okay from Phil to air it on GeekSpeak, I will do just that. But if you've seen the art, it starts off with the big three around a pile of rubble. You're not sure where the rubble is, but it plays highly into what happens in Infinite Crisis, this issue. For those of you who are not fans of JLA, for those of you who do not usually pick up issues of JLA, I would tell you, if you're waiting for Infinite Crisis, you have to read this issue. Major plot developments occur here that will probably leave you in the dust when Infinite Crisis actually comes out, and it's not too far away now. So please, folks, if you're a comic book fan, make sure JLA 119 is in your cart online or in your bag at the comic book store. Going with the idea of a little bit of new and a little bit of old, I have seen information on the brand new Mario game that they're working on for the DS, and it looks like it's going to be pretty much an old-fashioned style side-scroller Mario game. Type of Mario game that made Mario Brothers popular, that made it famous, is going to be made here by Nintendo. I look at the Sega side of things, and I see Sonic the Hedgehog. His most hyped games this day and age are the 3D versions of Sonic. Now, they are making a DS version of Sonic, which is going to be sort of 2D, not really. It's like special, like cell shading, that sort of thing. And I'm thinking, Nintendo probably has the right idea here. They're making a DS game that's pretty much on par with the old-fashioned Marios. Now, I played Sonic Advance a while back, and I don't know, maybe it's just my stubbornness or something. It just did not mesh with me. It felt like it was a bastardization of everything I loved when I was a kid from the Sonic series. I think Sonic had its peak back in the Genesis games. And it's probably never going to get there again. It's going to try its best, sure, but its popularity is never going to be where it was when the Genesis was at its peak of popularity. Try and try again, you're just not going to get there. And they're going about it the completely wrong way. I'll turn my attention to Sonic Gems Collection, for example. Now, Sonic Gems is coming out on every system in Japan and just on the GameCube here in the US. That might very well change in the upcoming months because they've done stuff like that before. But for now, it's only going to be a GameCube release, an exclusive, as you were. And this game has Sonic CD, which is a very good game. And it has a couple of other games. And it also has some old Sega games thrown in. mostly Game Gear Sonic games as well, because they pretty much ran out of good Genesis games to put on there. There's also Sonic R, and I believe there might even be some sort of form of Sonic Adventure on there, but I could be wrong. Oh, Sonic the Fighters. That's the other one that's on there. Sonic the Fighters would be the Sonic fighting game that came out a while back. So they're putting two 3D games, Sonic CD, and a couple of other Sonic games on there. The one glaring omission from this collection is Knuckles Chaotix. Now, for those of you who are going, huh, when I say that, Knuckles Chaotix was a 32X title. Again, those of you who are going, huh, because 32X wasn't exactly popular, 32X was the add-on that Genesis made pretty much when the PlayStation came out to try and combat the 32-bit market, to try and enhance their Genesis to be able to play games on the quality of a 32-bit system. The system itself was terrible. It was behind the times, very hard to make games for it. The peripheral itself sat on top of the Genesis and would break very, very easily, and it did not gain any popularity and was out pretty much as soon as it was in. But there were a couple of good games for it. I believe Virtual Fighter was one of them. Virtual Fighter 2, I think it was, that came out for the Sega 32X was very, very popular for a while. And Knuckles Chaotix was the other big one. And Knuckles Chaotix was the last, in my opinion, the last of the good Sonic games to come out. The same style, well, a different style, of course, because in this game, Knuckles and another character, whether it be Mighty the Bee or a couple of other characters, there was a crocodile in it, I believe, and there was some other character that I can't think of at the moment. And they were connected by rings. So wherever one character went, the other character was forced to go. But it was still as fast as an old-fashioned Sonic game, and it had an interesting physics to it. And, you know, you're still facing Robotnik like the old days. And it was fun. It was a very, very fun game. And this game is not on the Sonic Gems collection. Why? Because Sega can't emulate their own games. That's pretty much the skinny of it. The whole reason why Sonic CD was left out of Mega Collection was because they could not properly emulate Sonic CD in time to put it on the Mega Collection. And now, the version of Sonic CD that's going to be on Gems is the CD version, not the Sega CD version. It is the version that was first ported to the compact disc for the PC, as opposed to the original. And that one pales in comparison to the original. Now, the other games on it are, you know, good enough. Sonic R is interesting, and Sonic the Fighters is... I guess it's a good game. It never really caught my eye too much because the fighting system was a little lacking to me. But the fact that you have an entire collection out and you omit Knuckles Chaotix because you can't emulate your own game proves a lot. Nintendo, you're on the right track. Sega, you're far behind. There's a reason why Nintendo is still making systems, and Sega could just never get it right. The Sonic team, I would expect better from them. I really would. I mean, why can't I just hire one of the people who have made emulators for the PC and make one for their system? Because I'm sure they could do it. I'm sure they could hire the guy who made Gens. If Gens could do it, why can't they? If Gens could do it, why can't they? Time for the wind-up here on GeekSpeak. The wind-up is my nice little variation from the norm of a geek show. I talk a little sports for about 2 or 3 minutes. And this week's sports rant stays in the general range of the old. Ladies and gentlemen, it is 1998 all over again. The New York Jets cornerback is Vinny Testaverde. What are the Jets thinking? I mean, Chad Pennington's out, and Fiedler is out. So you're going to go with Brooks Bollinger this upcoming week. And Vinny Testaverde is back on the Jets. He will be taking the reins from Bollinger, chances are, the week after this upcoming week. Vinny Testaverde is done. He is done. That's the best way to put it. His best days are far, far behind him. Everybody seems to know this too, except for the Jets. They seem to think that their old quarterback will be able to mesh with their brand new system. That belief is an ancient one at that, because it takes a long time to actually master plays. And Vinny Testaverde takes a long time to master plays. Actually, he takes a longer time than most do. He just has a hard time getting down the information that he needs to succeed. Is it that he's slow? I don't know. I think it's just that he's old. He's set in his ways. The Jets that he played for no longer exist, folks. They don't. They're a different team now. They're a completely different team. Their offense plays entirely differently than they used to. So when you bring an old component into a brand new car, chances are you're going to lose in performance. The Jets looked like a contender in the beginning of this year. They looked like they could make it. They looked like they had a chance to go to the Super Bowl before things started here. Once the first week happened, we thought differently. Once the second week happened, we got hope. Once the third week happened, we were doomed. When Pennington got hurt, this season ended. And when Testaverde came in, I think next season ended as well. The Jets are dead ducks in a pond full of death, period. So Jets, shape up, because chances are your season's done. So start thinking for next year. Start getting Pennington ready. Because if he's not, well, then everybody's dead on the Jets, including their hopes and dreams. That was the windup. Here's the pitch. Every Monday from 2 to 3 here on Brooklyn College Radio, 1090 AM, and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org, you can hear more sports talk from me, Ian Levenstein, and Geek Speak. We'll be back this upcoming Thursday from 6 to 7 on Brooklyn College Radio, 1090 AM, and streaming on the web, brooklyncollegeradio.org. I believe the stream came up about halfway through this episode, so for those of you who were listening, thank you kindly for listening. And for those of you getting this from my feed over at geekspeak.typepad.com, I thank you for that as well. So, once again, I am Ian Levenstein, and you have been listening to Geek Speak here on Brooklyn College Radio. And I will see you guys next week for a brand new edition of Geek Speak. Episode 3 will air on Thursday from 6 to 7. The week after that, I'm not entirely sure if I will be on the air. It all depends on whether I am around to do so, because we will be off from school, and I believe I'm going to have company at my house, so I'm not entirely sure if we'll be able to get an edition out. I might try to get two editions out of Geek Speak next week. That all depends if I have the time, because, like I said, in the 1.5 edition of Geek Speak, I am going to be doing some of them from my house, and I hope you guys enjoy the quality on the 1.5 edition of Geek Speak, because I'm going to be hopefully making that better as time goes on, but I think it came up pretty good. I hope you guys thought so as well, and I hope you guys enjoyed this week's edition of Geek Speak. So once again, I am Ian Levenstein. I am out of here right now. I will see you guys next week. Take care, everybody.
It's time to speak geek with the geeks. Gaming, tech, news, and more here on Geek Speak. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Brooklyn College Radio, 1090 AM, and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. Let's geek out, everybody.